Hey, business building warrior, welcome to Silent Sales Machine Radio, the home of all the hundreds of success stories that you've heard over the past few years from students of the Proven Amazon course. We've got thousands of success stories in our free Facebook group from students who've gone through our training, and we've interviewed hundreds of them on this show. And today is another great guest who's built a beautiful business. He used to be in the restaurant business, spent some time in ministry as well, and now full-time for the last year and a half, 2 years, he's been selling on Amazon. He's also developed into one of the great coaches on our team as well. You're about to meet Mr. Grant Douglas. Something else I can tell you about him is he's going to be one of the presenters at our upcoming Proven Conference. The website for details on that, you'll hear us talk about it as well today on the show, but the website is three words. Remember these three words, theprovenconference.com. There'll be a link in the show notes to that and everything else we talk about today. But let me tell you a little bit more about Grant's business before we jump in. We spend some time today talking about one of the most recent changes that we've seen as Amazon sellers, where the shipping plans have changed a bit. Some of the pricing has changed. Grant really breaks down what he's seeing. He's a high volume seller. He's doing six figures per month in his business. So he's shipping a lot of product. He's primarily FBA, which means he's sending his products to Amazon. He's primarily online arbitrage sourcing as well with our replens model, which means he's shopping online retail stores that you and I are familiar with, sources his product online, brings it to his location. He used to use a prep center. We spent some time talking about why he transitioned and how that's going. Now he uses family. They send out one big shipment per week, a very unique arrangement I'd never actually heard before. And like I said, he's a great coach on our team as well. So lots of interesting topics to dive into. We spend some time talking about the contrast between a high volume, lower price model versus a high price, lower volume model. We teach both. We love both. We do both around here. Many of us do, my business included, embrace both models. But we talk about the difference between the two, who might be a good fit for each of them when you're starting out, that sort of thing. Lots of meat in today's podcast episode with Grant. You're going to learn some new things, I promise. But let me just encourage you one thing, one little announcement before we jump into the content today. If you don't have a free copy of the Silent Sales Machine book, that's the book that launched our 75,000 member Facebook group. It's completely free. This podcast, which has 800 plus episodes now, it all started with a book that I wrote over a weekend sharing some of the stories from some of the people that I was working with as I was learning e-commerce myself over 20 years ago. Well, we've updated that book 11 times. It's completely free still. We're about a year in to this new version having been out there, but we just love giving it away for free because it really gets you an insight into what's been built here, how we've come up with thousands of success stories from this community. So text the word free to the phone number I'm about to give you. Again, text the word free to this number, 507-800-0090. And if you live outside the United States, we'll stick a link in the show notes for you where you can get an email copy sent to you that way. But we'd love to have you check that out and plan to join us at our conference. I think after today's episode, you're going to be very fired up for our May 23rd through 25th conference 2024 in Orlando, Florida. Come see Grant and 40 other great leaders and successful students from our community teaching you what works right now in e-commerce for building multiple streams of income with an emphasis on the Amazon opportunities that you hear us talk about so much on this show. All right, let's jump over and hang out with Mr. Grant Douglas. Enjoy. So, hey, Grant, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me back again.
Good to see you again, my friend. I'm eager to jump into your story again, and let's get everyone up to speed.
Yeah, so I started selling on Amazon back in February 2021. I was employed. It was, you know, around COVID that time, I guess about a year after, and I was employed, but I knew I would be losing my job. So I had a friend that was selling on Amazon, doing mostly just the retail arbitrage, the clearance places, but having success with it. And so I was like, you know what? Like, I kind of like this working from home that we had during COVID, and I wanted to keep flexible schedule. My kids are young. They're 7, 5, and 2 now, but that youngest was on the way during that time. And it's just, it was one of those things of like, well, let me roll the dice and see what happens. And
yeah. What was your job before you made the leap?
So I've been in restaurant management for a while, fast food management before that. I was in ministry for some of the time as well. So that's what my past work experience is. And I say that I've done a lot of jobs working with people. So the biggest adjustment for me with Amazon was, you know, having a community, or initially not having a community, being a ninja behind a computer screen all day by myself, and that trying to transition for me. So that was tough, but really I've had so many jobs and I like them all. There's ways to make any job fun if you have the right, you know, mindset to it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was just curious your background, and I didn't realize, that you'd been in a ministry role as well. It seems like we have quite a few of those in our community, people who use this as supplemental income for the ministry role. Just a lot of former children's pastors and such. That's cool. All right. Well, take us wherever you'd like to go with the story. Keep us going.
Yeah. So ended up working for me. I was able to get full-time income by, it was August that I was my last week on the job. And then by September, I was having full-time income. You know, ever since then, this has been the sole source of income for my family. We do a few things on the side now. You know, I do coach on the side for a little bit. My wife does the Amazon Influencer program now. And there's a small amount of eBay and Walmart Marketplace kind of mixed in there that's, I guess, slowly increasing. But really just selling on Amazon has provided for our family for a while. And I was on the podcast in summer 2022. And then I was doing, I guess, similar numbers to what I'm doing now. But you know how, like, the supply chain in 2021 and everything was so jacked up that there were a lot of opportunities then that I guess don't exist now, or at least there's different opportunities now. And so, you know, even though I was having $100,000 a month months back in 2022, I'd sell probably 3% of the ASINs that I sold back then. You know, I've had to constantly repivot, and now I feel like I do have just a much more stable online arbitrage replens model that, you know, it is a lot more consistent and doesn't really fluctuate much month to month. I can increase when I want to, you know, dive in a little bit more, but really just online arbitrage is what I've been able to just double down on. It works better for me and my family, you know, by being able to work some before the kids wake up, being able to work some after the kids go to bed, being able to work during school. You know, if I personally was doing all retail arbitrage, you literally have to work the hours the stores are open, and it kind of right. Kind of limits that flexibility. There's definitely some benefits with that too, but just what works for me and my family has been just that yeah. flexibility of OA.
So it's still just you running the business then, or you have a team? What's your team look like?
Yeah, so I have one virtual assistant. He's been with me for a year and a half, almost. It'll be 2 years this summer. And I did have one VA for a year before that as well. And they do mostly sourcing for me. But, you know, as I've grown and as I've done, you know, coaching, it's a virtual assistant ends up being kind of just your everyday assistant where, you know, if I have like coaching invoices that I give, you know, each week, and he does those for me. And when we send inventory to Amazon FBA, he helps with putting the shipment together and getting it on Inventory Lab. That's the software that I use to help list on Amazon. And so I'm able to send him like a 15-minute video of, these are my products, these are how many units I have. All right, go upload that for me. And he does that during the day, his time while I'm sleeping. And the next morning, it's ready to go for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that we do, you mentioned retail arbitrage, and I used to do quite a bit of it, going to stores, finding the replens there. And there's a lot of advantages, disadvantages to both RA, OA. We typically encourage people to do both if you can, but it doesn't have to be you shopping. And I know, I'm not telling you this, Grant, you know this, but the listener's like, yeah, I don't have to go to stores either. Well, you don't have to necessarily. We've got currently, I think, two or three shoppers on our team that hit stores. Mm-hmm. And find our that way. And it's just another way to expand, right? I mean, there's just so many different ways to do this business though, but it sounds like you've got, you're 100% OA replants, correct?
Yeah. So I do a little bit of RA. You know, there are a few stores and it is nice where, you know, we know the aisles that our in-store replens are. And, right. You know, my wife has gone, my mother-in-law has gone before, and I just have to send her just a few picks and say, hey, grab any of this while you're there.
Yeah. Sure.
So yeah, it's
kind of how we roll too. We've got a shared spreadsheet, you know, that our team, like anyone who's out, and we kind of get it memorized after a while, which ones we're grabbing. And it's pretty smooth. Well, tell me more about your business, man. I know there's more to share. You're a great coach on our team. Maybe some stories from that. Just take us wherever you want to go, man. Just if it's your show, add some value for the listeners today.
Yeah. So I have one virtual assistant. Like I said, mostly sourcing, probably sources for 30 hours a week, does miscellaneous tasks for me for another, you know, 10 to 15. Mm-hmm. And then I do have prep help. So, you know, my story is maybe a little bit different where I started with a prep center, and it was where I sent things out to Oregon to a tax-free prep center. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because the math there with that is that you can save in sales tax what you have a prep center do for you. So if you're in a state that you pay sales tax and you cannot get sales tax back in any way, and there's a lot of states that you can't,
right,
then it's just financially makes more sense to send those items that have a higher buy cost to a place like Oregon, where they'll charge you $1.50 a unit to prep it, but you would have been charged $2 in sales tax. And if right, that's the case, then you actually might have gotten some of your inventory prepped for completely free, right? So I did that for a while. You know, once I hit a certain amount of units, it started to be a pretty big bill on the prep center. And it made me start to inquire about, like, hey, like, what are some ways to, is there a way to get some of my sales tax back? And I know a lot of states you can't, like I said, but in my state I can. And it's incredibly complicated. I'm grateful that my virtual assistant does it for me, you know, after learning it myself for a little bit. So we decided to do prep in-house because we started to lean in on the stores that we are tax exempt on. And then also, you know, some of the other ones, we found a way to get reimbursed on most of them. And so that also combined with the fact that a lot of my family, I have three family members that are realtors. And in 2023, you know, the real estate market kind of crashed a little bit and their income decreased a little bit. And one of them was like, man, I think I have to go back, start working again. Talk to me about, they wanted to go to work at Kohl's. And I said, Don't do that. Let me start sending more inventory here. And how about you start prepping for me?
Right.
And little by little, that changed into let's get everything prepped by them. And so my family takes care of all of my poly bagging and stickering for me.
That's awesome. How long has that been now that you've been doing it that way?
I think exclusively self-prep since probably about a year now, probably about last March.
Okay. So you've got a great experience, or say you can contrast the two. That's what I'm going for. You used a prep center for a significant period of time for a significant amount of inventory, and now you're using family, keeping it close to home. And is the inventory all at their houses or your house, or where does it sit typically?
So it sits at my office. Like, I'm sitting here, and I was telling you before we started, this is an old Holiday Inn Express. It's a weird little building, but with weird little buildings, you don't pay as much as a nice, beautiful warehouse, right?
Right.
And we actually have there's a door that is locked in from both sides. And so my drivers have a code to the first door, and they can't get in, you know, the rest of where all my inventory is. Okay. And so we have everything shipped here because I don't even have to be here for my inventory to arrive. And when you're taking a whole bunch of boxes and lifting them over and over again, one by one into your car, and then you're taking it into your office, and then you're unboxing it, like, one, it's a lot of time wasted, but also it's a lot of physical things that I just don't need my back to hurt. And so it just made sense. Once we started getting this place here, then everything just arrives here. It's a really simple, once it's here, you just unbox it and sort it. And my family's out of town, but they drive an hour to an hour and a half up here once a week, and we get one big shipment done once a week. I love it that way because my brain doesn't have to think about prep but one day, and there's benefits. And I mean, there's pros and cons to, you know, getting something delivered and waiting 6 days before you ship it, but for my family, it makes a lot more sense that way.
You've created a nice routine That's beautiful. I love there's always new interesting ways to do this business. And you kind of adapt around the space you have, the people you have available to you, the resources, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And here's another new way. Family drives in once a year, once a week, and you're using an old hotel. And it's been converted to unusual office spaces as your center and central location. And I love that arrangement where your stuff is dropped off even when you guys aren't there throughout the week. And then you guys all go in and sort through it once a week. That's so cool. It's just
creative. I mean, lots of times I know there's this hesitation of when people, they start, their house starts to get filled mm-hmm. and it's almost like the next step is I need to get a warehouse. The next step is I need to have this kind of standalone thing. And I quite frankly won't ever have one unless I have an employee that's paid to be there mm-hmm. because, how many times if you back when you had a lot of stuff shipped to your house, how many times did you go out and run errands and you come home and there's a pile of boxes at your house? And it's like, oh, I got to put those in, right? Well, the last thing you want is a pile of boxes sitting on a busy highway or, with a bunch of other retail stuff next door or whatever it may be. And so it's just for us, it's just worked. So I encourage people like, hey, before you get a warehouse, like first, maybe let's optimize home a little bit, add some shelving in there, mm-hmm. get some better prep tables, and maybe, hey, instead of doing shipments, maybe do shipments twice a week instead of once a week. Like, let's try to do some more things. And then also before you get a warehouse, like, don't be afraid to look for just those doctor office type places that, or these rented out places that have like suites inside of suites. Because it's just kind of a step that you can take before making that bigger step of having this huge amount of overhead.
Committing to a 5-year lease on a warehouse and, right.
Exactly. Like I get a yearly lease, and that's something I didn't even think about, but that's not something that most people, doing the volume that I do have. And so I'm really grateful for it.
For business space, 1-year lease is very unusual. Yeah. Typically one of 3 to 5 year. So there's a lot of little steps you can take in between having it in your bedroom versus a warehouse. Some of the ones are, a handful of neighbors, mm-hmm. People.
Yeah. I've heard like different garages, some like me, you have that one neighbor that has that really nice 4-car standalone garage that they don't use for tools anymore. And that becomes your prep center. I mean, I've kind of embraced the fact of, when selling, trying to penny pinch as much as I can, try to lower my overhead as much as I can, when you're ordering, getting as much cash back as you can, get those credit card rewards when you can, discount gift cards when you can, all these little things. The more units you do, the more they add up. And without a doubt, paying overhead, going from paying just your mortgage that you have to pay anyway, to paying several $1,000s in overhead, that will affect your bottom line maybe more than you think. And there's always more things than you think of when you move into a new space. There's things you didn't consider. And so one mistake we made here is when there is a new driver, sometimes they don't know our door code. It's supposed to be kind of in their pad and normally isn't a problem. But so we did go on vacation once and there was a bunch of boxes like inside the, old hotel, but outside of our office.
Right.
So like we're going out of town for the Legends Conference, which will probably happen before this podcast is aired. But so I'll be in St. Louis this week. And we just have just someone literally running by just to move stuff from the one room to the other once a day. And that's it.
Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. That's such a cool arrangement. I love that arrangement. It's never occurred to me, and I haven't heard anyone else using that arrangement. I love the creativity of the solution here. And again, most people start off doing it out of their house, but we have people, the people who fascinate me are the international students who don't live in the US and they're doing your exact business model mm-hmm. with a prep center or with friends, and they've figured these things out. this can be a hands-free business and it can be automated to that point. But where else do you want to go? What else would you like to share from your story? How are you finding your inventory these days? You mentioned you have a significantly shorter list of ASINs. Like, how'd you go from a large list to a short list while maintaining your numbers and profitability, which I wouldn't mind hearing as well, however you want to represent that?
So I'd say not, I may have misspoke. I don't have a, I'm probably the opposite of, I'm trying to keep a long list of ASINs. Now I do lean into, you know, moving inventory faster and selling a lot of units versus, you know, selling less. And so like, and I think the important thing here is we talk about like, you know, strategies of like how to move more inventory, that it's all preference. You know, this isn't a, people are looking for a, hey, which is right, which is wrong, which is best. And, you know, there's multiple best practices where you know, you have on one hand, you know, you buy, you know, just maybe three units of something and you send it and you have it really high, and across the month it sells, you know, 3 to 5 units, and you keep that going and replenish. And then you also have the scenario of, you know, maybe you're sending in 10 and those 10 sell. And the next time you send in 20 and you keep trying to see like, you know, how much inventory can I turn? In this scenario, your price is going to have to be a little bit lower, right? You're going to have to be closer to the buy box to get a lot of sales velocity. And, you know, there's pros and cons to both. And I love having the conversation with my students when we start of like, look, there's some ASINs that it's going to make a lot more sense to buy few, sell high, and let them just sell the 3 to 5 times a month. There's going to be some ASINs, though, that it makes sense to, you know, let's say you have an unlimited amount of supply, you know, whether it's a wholesaler or, you know, there's some ASINs that I buy 5 to 10 units of like every day for a 14-day period. And if I needed to, the supply is there to have, you know, over 100 units in stock. In those cases, maybe it does make sense to lower your price a little bit. Not, and I'm never talking about undercutting the buy box, right? We're not, but you know, being more competitive with the buy box, either at it or a couple dollars higher, and just moving more inventory. And I think the illustration I give is like, you know, if you sell 5 units a month of something and each one is $10 profit, that's awesome. Every month you're going to make $50 profit. But it could be there's a scenario that you could sell 20 units of that for $4 profit each. If you lower your price a little bit and your profit's down, but your overall profit is up, right? Maybe you can do $80 a month in, mm-hmm. in profit. And the key here is both work, right? Both of those work. As long as we're not undercutting the buy box and tanking listings, which I am not a fan of that at all. As long as we are still just moving inventory at the current buy box or a little higher, then there's pros and cons to both, you know. And I, on a lot of ASINs, I lean into the latter. I lean into, you know, being within 3% of the buy box, moving faster. You know, it allows for a higher account health rating, a higher IPI score. Those are things that, at the very least, what we can understand is that Amazon likes that.
Amazon likes higher volume in general.
Yeah. And so there's some rewards to that, like maybe a little bit more buy box favor in that case. And like I said before, I lean into cash back. And so if you're selling something for 20 units a month instead of 5, then the cash back that I get on my credit card is 4 times as much. You know, right. I mean, I'm getting several thousand every month of cash back that I'm not even including in my criteria, right? So, and for those that don't know what that is, of like when you place an order online, you have a couple options, whether it's a credit card that gets you anywhere from 1 to 3% cash back on any buy costs you make, or you have extensions like Rakuten and Be Frugal and Top Cash Back, and you get 1 to even upwards of 15% cash back on those. Well, you know, the more you buy, the more that money is that comes in, and that's just extra gravy on top of profit you're already making. And so sometimes it makes sense to lean into that, and sometimes it makes sense to play the margin game and be a little safer and be up high, especially when testing too.
Yeah, you know, in my general take on it, you know, I've been pounding the drum pretty loud the last few months about, you know, playing above buy box as a viable strategy. Not for everyone, but I think the person it makes the most sense for is the new seller who's tentative, nervous, limited funds, and mm-hmm. they really want proof of concept. And they're saying to themselves, I can't find anything profitable. Like, okay,
right.
I've got something to show you. Do I see this as something you can do at scale? Probably not, although we're starting to see some pretty cool results with it. But mm-hmm. When you're buying 2 or 3 units at a time, for all the reasons you listed and several others, there's disadvantages to that. But it does completely minimize your risks. So it's the maximum margin, minimum risk, highest odds of having proof of concept as fast as possible way to do replans. And of course, there's a whole bell curve there. But as you scale, obviously, it makes a lot more sense. I mean, you're getting bulk discounts. You order 30 units of something, you can pay less per unit than if you're ordering two or three, right? So you can really get up. And like you said, Amazon likes to see more transactions. That's just, they just do. Your metrics look better. It's just a smoother way to run your business. But when you're first getting started out, especially, or when you're looking for ACE and like, man, I just can't find anything. I love that above buy box. I'll stick a link in the show notes to the conversation we've been having about that topic, above buy box. Make myself a note here so I don't forget. But yeah, I completely get, I love your nuanced approach to that conversation. And if someone's not, you know, just, I guess it depends on how much money they have to invest in their business. It's kind of what it comes down to, and how skeptical they are. We'll get back to the show in just a moment, but I have to tell you about a coaching program that's been around for about 19 years. It's coached almost 10,000 e-commerce business building warriors. It's got a team of about 60 coaches who are not only great teachers with tremendous hearts who love their students, but they're all succeeding at the business strategies that you hear taught on this show. If you haven't figured it out yet, I'm talking about our coaching program. There's a link at silentgym.com. Get over there, get on our schedule, have a free consultation, zero pressure. We're going to help you build your business on that call. Sign up at silentgym.com, free consultation. See if our coaching program is a good fit for you, where you get to not only work one-on-one with one of our tremendous coaches, not only do you get that, you also get a reactive coach that you can contact at any point in time. That's a separate coach. You get all the training and content that we provide around here at no cost now and into the future. Tremendous list of benefits. I'm not going to go into all of them right now. Silentgym.com. Click on the coaching link, sign up for a consultation. Hey, let's get back to the program. I completely get, I love your nuanced approach to that conversation. And if someone's not, you know, just, I guess it depends on how much money they have to invest in their business. It's kind of what it comes down to, and how skeptical they are.
So I think that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that is the negative of, if you are looking for more volume, is that it does tie up cash flow a little bit more, right? If I'm buying four times as much mini units, then I have four times as much sitting in a warehouse. Mm-hmm. And so that's a recognized risk with that, or negative with that.
And if that agent goes bad and you have to recall the inventory, instead of recalling three or four units, you're recalling 80 units, or it's like,
right,
I'm going to do it these.
So that's not, like you said, a great approach for a brand new seller, because you need to know which ASINs that you can, you know, when you can see on Amazon, man, this one sells 500 times per month on Amazon based off all these metrics I'm seeing, you know what? Sending in 20 to 30 actually isn't that risky, right? Maybe there's just 10 sellers on there. You said, okay, that's actually not that risky. But as a new seller, you might be testing on something. Maybe it's in that drop range of like 30 to 40. It should sell, you know, five, no problem. But 20 would be pushing it a little bit. And it's great for a new seller to, you know, just send in those 3 to 5 unit test buys, see what price it sells at, send it in high. I always, when I send in my inventory, so my virtual assistant helps me with like loading everything to give to Inventory Lab before I send my inventory.
Right.
And so he will always send in at the buy box, $5 above the buy box, or $5 of what my current price is, whichever is higher. That's the price we send it in as. And if it's a replan, and then if it doesn't sell, once it's fully checked in, then you can start to lower it a little bit if needed. And I've honestly recently, though, like, you know, since you've been talking about the above the buy box approach, there's a few ASINs. What I've done is kind of looked at it in the reverse way, where there's some ASINs that I have been sending in a lot of, you know, at the buy box, and I'm making good margins. I'm making good enough to what makes sense for me. But then what I did was I went to my repricer and I was like, let me bump up my repricer min $1. Okay, this was selling at $22.99 really well. Let me just see, if I go to $23.99, how much volume am I losing? And I raised one up and I was like, okay, I'm not losing that much volume. Let me see. Okay, that works. And then it could be that when I raised it up to $25.99, maybe then the volume just goes away. It's a little bit too high for that listing, and I go back down to my other price. But that type of approach of, you know, when I send in now, I'm basically just finding out, does it sell? How fast does it sell? And did it sell? And then my secondary send in is when I'm really intentional about which approach do I want to take? Am I going to keep selling high slower, or am I going to sell, you know, within 3% of the buy box faster? And that's the beauty of it. And why it's so nuanced is that the answer is different for every single ASIN. If you have an ASIN, there's 5 sellers on and you're the only FBA seller, you shouldn't sell at the buy box. You should sell higher. But if you're sitting in an ASIN that is really popular, that has 50 sellers on it, 30 of them are FBA, you probably need to be a little closer to the buy box to get those sales. And there's tons of ASINs in between. And it just takes time to learn which ones it works better for and which ones it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And building those instincts over time. Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. And I can see why you're a very popular and successful coach on our team. You really know your stuff. You've ramped up very quickly, built a beautiful business. Share with us whatever numbers you're comfortable sharing. Like, how's business?
Yeah. So February, I had my best month I've had since October 2022. And that October was so good because I got lucky. I got a pallet of some ASINs that I sold through, and then I got an IP complaint the next month later, and those ASINs were gone forever. But apart from that, I think this might be maybe my second or third best month ever, but I did, I think, $145,000 in sales. I would say that all of it is FBA, fulfilled by Amazon. I did a little bit of FBM. I shipped some in Q4, and quite frankly, it wore me out having to daily ship things. Like, there were some days I wanted to take off, but I had to go to the office because I got more orders that day. So I'll probably do it again Q4, but for now, just all fulfilled by Amazon. Probably 90 to 95% of it, online arbitrage. We were actually, our account got banned at Target for like 9 months online. If you're ordering in bulk at places like that, just be careful with like Target Circle rewards and things like that. We went too heavy on a Black Friday deal and they didn't like it. But so we learned the Target store very, very well after that because we had to go in store. So Target's about one of my few RA1s that I still do some. But the rest of it is things that anyone from anywhere in the entire US could, and anyone in the entire world, if they had a prep partner, right, that they could... they could find those things. And it just takes time to know where to look, especially where to look for the higher profit ones too.
What are your net margins, if you know, for last year, or how's it going so far this year, just approximately?
Yeah. So I think perspective is important because when my family comes and drives up and they all three of them or two of them go into a Prius and drive up here to save on gas, I want them to be able to stay as long as possible. And they want to be able to stay as long as possible. So part of the reason why, again, I lean into, you know, doing more units is because it means more work for them, which is more profit for me too. But I want to be able to pay them more so that they don't have to go work retail again. And so I aim for 10% margin, probably month to month. It's anywhere between 8 to 12% margin. That's before cash. So that's after I pay everything except for myself. And that's before cash back. So cash back would, again, add another $2,000-$3,000, I guess, to that per month. But for me, that's what I'm happy with, because it means, like I said, I can pay them more, and it satisfies what I need for my family. I think that
beautiful business, man. That's better money than some of, it sounds like, the other careers that you've had in the past. You know, it sounds like at least twice what you were doing before with the flexible lifestyle. And you mentioned you guys homeschool, right? Didn't you?
So they're in a co-op. So there's a place they go 2 days a week, but then we homeschool from there. So yeah, it helps for, I won't go back to working for anyone unless I have to, just because of, you know, when you wake up and if you just need to take off for the day, like I told you before, I had to get some stitches from bumping heads with somebody playing basketball not long ago. And I was able to, after basketball, I was planning to work. And I went home and I rested instead. And that's the case for anything, you know, and it's not just me. Like if my kids are sick, if my wife needs a break, you know, like she texted me today, She'd asked if I could come home earlier. And so I said, yeah, I'll come home when we're done chatting here. And it works so good doing that. So
yeah,
I think that's what, you know, what people sometimes miss is what that added flexibility and what that added, I think even what COVID taught us was that there's very few jobs that are guaranteed, no matter how big the company is, no matter how successful they are. If I was still in the restaurant business, I probably would have lost my job also, just during that time, or at least I would have lost a lot of hours. Mm-hmm. And I think in the end of the day, you know, my wife and I have decided like we're going to bet on ourselves and we're going to bet on our business and we're going to put our livelihood in our hands as much as we can. Definitely Amazon plays a role in that too, but everything apart from Amazon, you know, it lies in our hands. And so we're more than happy to, even if the money was maybe a little bit less than if I went to the corporate world and worked 50, 60 hours a week, even still, I would still do a version of what I do now, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I've said this, you know, I started saying it a decade ago. I've been doing that. That's been my reality for over 20 years at this point. We homeschool our whole crew all the way up. Now three of them are married and two of them, I got two left at home, but this is how we did life for 20 years. And I started saying about 10 plus years or so ago that if someone had slid a blank piece of paper to me and said, write any number you want, that is your annual salary. I don't care what the number is, but you've got to get up every day, let's say, you know, 5, 6 a.m. You're not going to be home till 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's your new reality. I would have refused it for all the benefits that you've listed and more. Like, you know, our kids are friends and I know them and I know them well and they know me well. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my sons asked me to be his best man at his wedding. Like, there's time for relationships.
Right.
To see them under the same roof, turn from little kids into young adults that are living great lives. And we got to put our values into them and have in-depth conversations in the middle of the day while we're slapping stickers on bags, maybe, right? Just that whole experience. And I'm not saying that's the one right way to do family. Of course, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that's what our family experienced. And I wouldn't have traded it for the world. And if other people want that, I'd love to help them make that happen. Not to make anyone feel guilty, you know, and anytime I say this, I always say, you know, there's parents out there doing what they got to do to make ends meet, to pay the bills. God bless you. We're in your corner. Mm-hmm. We're huge fans. I get it. But man, just to have these other opportunities and options on the table and validated by hundreds of people in our community who are making it happen and the trends are in our favor. And I would even say this, Grant, you know, let's say the Amazon thing starts to change or it starts to drift into a way that we're like, I don't know, I'm a little uncomfortable with that. Well, the big numbers supporting this whole thing are people are shopping online more than ever. And if you know how to take products from point A to point B and put them online, it's the same skill set. That transition from eBay to Amazon was super smooth because that's where the customers went. And if the customers go somewhere else, all right. And we're starting to see a lot of Walmart activity in our group, right? eBay's making a bit of a comeback. It's such an easy transition. This skill set, the relationships, the connections that you have, the facilities that you have, the team, that can just lead to so many different income streams. It's not about one specific product or one specific model and one specific platform. This skill set translates. So we really are building, and we're young pioneers in all of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just brand new territory that has nothing but open-ended opportunities. I feel like we as a community, not just you and I, but as a community, the thousands of us doing this stuff, we've made some really good decisions that bode well for our future, for our families. And I'm as bullish as I've ever been about e-commerce, the future of selling physical product, e-commerce. Right now, Amazon, for the foreseeable future, it's still Amazon, but just all the doors it opens. So, I mean, I loved hearing your story and I'm excited that you're just another family that's doing this. This is your reality. Mm-hmm. This stuff works. And I'm honored to work side by side with you too as a coach on our team as well. But maybe, do you have any coaching stories, anything pop to mind? We didn't really prepare a whole lot for this. I love putting our coaches on the spot, but just maybe it comes to mind, or a lesson from a student or something they're struggling with that you helped them through. Anything like that come to mind as I mentioned your role on the coaching team? And two, I want to talk about, you're going to be at our conference here coming up, and as we're recording this in May, the Proven Conference. I want to hit on that before we let you go as well.
Yeah, at the end, I'll share just a little snippet about kind of what I'm going to share at conference for sure. Cool. But as you were talking about kind of Amazon, it made me think of, and I think maybe even hinted at it, right? Where some people are doing Walmart just a little bit more. And I think possibly that is related to some of these new fees and it's kind of scaring away people from FBA. I'd love to kind of talk about that just a little bit.
Let's do it, man. Yeah.
My perspective on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me start with the story. You probably know this is a tiny little parable. You probably know this one, but have you ever heard the one of the Chinese farmer before?
I don't know. Get it started. I'll tell you.
It'll ring a bell. So let's say there's this Chinese farmer and he has horses. And one of his horses run away and his neighbors come up to him and they say, "Hey, man, I'm so sorry. That's awful." And he says, "Maybe." Then the next day, the horse comes back. A whole bunch of horses come with him. And so now instead of, you know, his five, he has an initial five more, too. So he has 10. His neighbors come over. They say,
"That's great news.
Hey, I'm so happy. That's great." Right. He says, "Maybe."
Yeah. Keep it going.
I love it. Yeah. Next day, the horse, one of the new horses, wild horses, it breaks his son leg. Neighbors come over. "Hey, I'm so sorry. That's awful that happened to you." "Maybe." And the next day, and the story goes on and on, right? And so the point of that story is that we don't always know how something's going to shake out because we don't have foresight. We can guess. And something that's a temporary, you know, negative thing can be a long-term, really positive thing. Yeah. And the
Hebrew principle there is anytime you meet opposition, there's always opportunity. Mm-hmm. Every single time there's opportunity in opposition, you know, which is another way to translate that parable. It's like, you know, son broke his leg. Well, that protected him from having to go off to battle, if I remember correctly, or something like that.
The army recruiter came or whatever, and right, he didn't have
exactly.
To
go. Exactly. You just never know. Even those points of opposition turn into opportunity if you stay creative. It's all about the mindset, ultimately, and how you, and I would even push back, you know, one of the things I say is if you've got a community and you've built relationships, every single point of opposition you're going to encounter in e-commerce, without exception, has multiple ways to pivot and turn it into opportunity every single time. In 20 plus years, I've never seen an exception to that.
So how that, and I'm telling this parable because it relates to these fees, because this is to me a carbon copy of the type of things I heard back when they got rid of the small and light program. So there used to be a program where for $12 and under, they had discounted fees if you enrolled your ASINs. It was really profitable because not everybody knew how to do it, even though it was pretty easy. And then when they removed it, there were basically this inventory of things priced between $10 to $12 that became not as profitable. And there were so many people that I think posted something on the lines of like, "Man, I am done with anything under $15. Like, because Amazon did this, there's no money there." Well, I saw all that. I saw everybody talking about it. And you know what I did is I kept selling things at $9.99 and under. I kept some of those things that were selling for $11. I just turned it up to $13.99. And you wouldn't believe 3 to 6 months later how much money I made off of those products that everyone else abandoned because they were so afraid of the increase in the individual fee.
Yeah.
And if it is true, let's say it is true that there's a lot of people that are going to run away from FBA. Maybe they're going to do FBM, which for some ASINs, it might make more sense with the new fees to FBM certain products. Sure. Maybe they're going to go to Walmart, and some ASINs might make sense to do Walmart or both. If that happens, I'm still going to be at FBA, and my competition is going to go down, and my sales velocity is going to skyrocket.
Yep.
And so I'm not...
Customers haven't gone anywhere. That's the point I keep making. Amazon scares away the customers with the fees. The customers are going to pay the fees. Mm-hmm. Really that simple at the end of the day.
Yeah. And really, there's no way to know exactly what it's going to look like in 3 to 6 months. But that's my prediction. My prediction is that if you do stick with it, if you maybe make a few tweaks, like I had a student that he was sending in his shipments daily. I said, "Hey, I think it's time to do once a week now. Build up that inventory, send in bigger shipments so that you pay less of those inventory placement fees." Right. Sure. So maybe there's a few tweaks and stuff we need to make.
Yeah.
But if you can figure out how to lower those fees while also keeping in mind that on April 15th, Amazon is reducing fees by an average of 20 cents a unit. And I posted this in the Facebook group, and I fully recognize that, you know, I sell more units than other people, so this is going to affect me less than others, and I fully recognize that. But just to give a practical example, like even though my last shipment was $100 more than normal that I sent to FBA, which on surface, like I could absolutely, I could see the frustration. And I was very nervous all morning about that. At the end of the day, when I did the math on it, I paid 7 cents more per unit. And that means that if these things sell on April 15th or later, I'm actually going to pay less, make more money per unit because I'm saving 20 cents on the back end.
Exactly.
And so it's just important to keep in mind, like, look, I think why these fees are really harder because these fees are confusing. It's not just a, hey, just adjust this setting and, or actually RevSeller, which is an extension I use to like calculate profitability. And so, hey, just RevSeller is going to update it for you. The new fees, don't worry about anything. Just keep buying profitability. This is why this one is hard. And I think is difficult for a lot of people is because you got to do a little extra math. And you have to play around with your shipment a little bit. And there's a lot of unknowns when you send of you might get a fee, you might not. And that is legit hard. But after we do this for a couple months, we're going to know how to change our settings. We're going to know what to expect on average shipping. And all we can do is just move forward and control what we can control. And I do think if we do that, then at the end of the day, we're going to see very similar to the same results.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm very confident of it. Because, you know, from my perspective, just, you know, 20 plus years, again, I keep leaning on that. I can go back to, as an eBay seller, before Amazon existed, and give you instance after instance where people ran screaming for the hills as sellers. Oh no, fee increase. Oh no, policy change. I'm out of here. This is, but those of us who stuck around and pivoted and waited for the reality to settle in, which is customers pay all fees. It's just the reality. The business doesn't, I mean, sure, we're the one writing the check, but if we're selling on profitable ASINs and customers are buying them, that just means prices have gone up. I mean, look how much prices have gone up in the past 4 years on everything, thanks to inflation, right? This is just Amazon adapting to, like, their fuel costs a lot more than it used to. It costs, you know, I see signs popping up around town. They got to pay people, you know, $25 to get them to show up to work on time. Everything's more expensive. Who's paying the bill ultimately? The shopping customers. We're just part of that churn, part of that machine. So yeah, you adapt, you raise your prices. If an ASIN's not profitable, you get rid of it and stop selling it and you go find the profitable ASINs. And that's what makes me so bullish about the future. I feel really good about the future of Amazon because it's just so incredibly easy to find ASINs that are worth testing against.
Yeah.
Buy it for 20, then I can confidently sell it for buy box and make a couple bucks, or I can test it well above buy box because it's such a fast moving product. I'm one of only a couple of FBA sellers. Yeah, I'll test it for $15-$20 profit. Let's see what happens. Send in a couple units and boom, it starts selling. Those ASINs are everywhere. So I feel really good about the future. And actually, I've learned after seeing, without exaggeration, at least 50, if not closer to 100 of these little spikes in policy change or fee change. Mm-hmm. Makes people nervous every time. Those actually represent opportunity, right? Because it thins the herd a little bit, but in reality, I don't think it does. I think the people making the most noise are still making a lot of money and running great businesses. They just love to kind of like point out the pain points, but they're still doing great. The opportunity is still expanding. So I feel personally very bullish about the next, say, year to 3 years with Amazon. Bullish as I ever have. All indicators are there. They're pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into their logistics network. Like, they want to be able to get you anything from their catalog to your front porch in a couple hours for as many people as possible. They can't do all the heavy lifting involved with that.
Right.
They need the resellers filling the shelves at these 150 plus warehouses. So opportunity is just beginning from my vantage point. And yeah, I love your perspective on that, man. I appreciate you diving into the numbers a little bit there.
Yeah. And, you know, conference is coming up in a couple of months, and I'm sure this will be, you know, at the end of every talk, there's always a chance for a Q&A. I'm sure this will be a highly talked about thing, but, you know,
if it hasn't died down by then.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is true too. So, but I'll be at conference and I'll be talking, about more than anything, like kind of how I build my catalog. And so I love using the word catalog of, it's the same concept as, you know, a finding testable ASINs, but it, by using the word catalog, I kind of mean of like, these are long-term things, long-term Amazon links, long-term supplier links that maybe it's not a testable ASIN right now, but maybe it is a testable ASIN in 3 to 6 months. You know, maybe the price tanked horribly and you see that right now and you're sourcing and you're like, nope, I'm not going to buy it now. Well, how do you build the catalog of saving a lot of those ASINs, keeping track of them, looking back later to see if they're profitable at a later time, you know, kind of what to look at to kind of build that? Because over the course of, you know, 3 years running, I have about 5,000 ASINs in my catalog. Yep. I only have about a little under 1,000 that are active right now. And there's a lot of them that are just the price is tanked and I'm just waiting for it to go back. Maybe some of them it's out of stock and I have to keep monitoring it to see if it's back in stock. Mm-hmm. And it's probably a lot of them I need to get rid of. And I just haven't had time to go through and reevaluate that ASIN that sold for me really well a year ago is officially discontinued and it's never going back into stock.
Right. And that's what's discouraging for me when something that was doing well gets discontinued and I can't get it anymore. If the price tanks, that doesn't discourage me. That's a delay. That's a pause button on that ASIN.
Right.
Because especially if Amazon jumps on it, because they're going to lose interest eventually. But what they will have done, if Amazon's on it, and let's say we went from 30 sellers to 90 sellers, and it just price just crashes, all that means to me is I'm going to make a lot of money on that sucker about 4 months from now. Because it's going to boost it in the algorithm. Customer attention is going to be all over it. A whole bunch of people are going to get used to buying that thing. And they're still going to want it after all the sellers have burned through all their cheap inventory, realizing they're not making any money. And Amazon's lost interest for whatever reason, can't get it anymore, whatever. Boom, yeah. There it is. So I love that idea of a catalog, like you said, where in your case, 80% of your ASINs, you're not selling on right now, but you are
monitoring them. And there's all kinds of software out there, you know, just to pitch the system that isn't out yet, but I know will be out soon. But if you have a software like that, or Replan dashboard, it can keep an eye on those ASINs for you. And then when it does go back into profitability, it'll alert you. It'll let you know. And so but the hardest part is building that list, right? Like that's absolutely the hardest part. I tell all my students, like the ones that are just starting off, they're like, Grant, what do I need to do next? I need to do this, And it's very clear what the first step is. The amount of money that you have allocated to buying inventory on Amazon, you need to be out of money. You need to come to me and say you found too many ASINs to buy, and then we'll move on to step two. You know, if you can't source well enough to run out of that each month, then you need to get better at sourcing. Or whatever it may be. But yeah, at the end of the day, step one is you need to get very efficient on sourcing. And if you can find ASINs to add to your catalog and to test and send in, and you can do that well, every single issue on the back end is fixable. You have a problem knowing what to send in, how many to send in. Okay, there's software for that. That's fine. It's taking you way too long to prep. You're doing all this. There's prep help. You can get a prep center. Right. You know, I'm out of hours. Like I'm doing this and there's so many hours that I'm doing and I don't have enough time to actually buy. You might need a shopper. You know, you might need a buyer. You know, all of those issues, those are fixable. The thing that I can't fix is if you have extra money to spend, and you haven't learned the skill of how to source enough to spend that money the right way, you need to work on sourcing and sourcing methods. And the good news is if my method that I talk about with sourcing doesn't work for you, well, let me teach you one of the other 10 methods that work for other people, and just one has to click.
Yep, that's right. And you can run that one into a seven-figure business. And there's dozens of different ways to find that test-worthy inventory. As the Olsons always say, two great coaching leaders on our team, you know what fixes that? Go find more ASINs. That really is, that's the heart of this. That's the heart of the business model, this entry-level foundational business model. Until you've got this, we strongly discourage anyone from trying to tack on some of those higher risk, higher skill set required models, you know, branded bundles or even wholesale. I say, you know, let's move with caution into wholesale. People think it is something that it's not. Or, you know, launching your own private label product, those kinds of things. Like, let's wade slowly into those waters. Let's prove that you got the skill set here to build this foundation first. Because once you got that and you're confident, like, hey, give me an hour, I'll find 15 test worthy ASINs. You know, once you're in that territory, now you're onto something. And like you said, Grant, every solution you can run into, it's just a matter of applying the right resource to it after you've got that skill set. And some people think they've got it. They think it's scanning barcodes, or they think it's, you know, finding stuff for $5 in clearance that I can sell for $25. No, that's not the skill set we're talking about. We're talking about looking at a keep chart and identifying opportunity and test-worthy ASINs. And oftentimes it's there's hidden indicators that you don't know yet. This isn't instinct. Take some time, take some practice. But yeah, great job, man. Great stuff today. Well, I'm eager to get you home to your wife, man. You said that's the next on your agenda today. So yeah, let's wrap this one up so you can get home early today. What do you say?
Yeah, sure. That sounds good. No worries at all. Always good. Chat with you. It'll be good. I think you'll be at Legends Conference here in a couple of days with me as well.
And then yeah, by the time we'll folks hear this, that will have already come and gone. But I love that group and love hanging out with you guys. I think I'm going to have a presentation for you the first morning, and we'll stick a link to what that's all about in the show notes too for those who don't know about Legends. But yeah, see you there, man. See you in St. Louis.
All right. Sounds good.
Sounds good, buddy. Well, let me talk to the listeners for just a moment. You've been hanging out today with Grant Douglas, one of the great coaching leaders on our team, who's doing a tremendous job for us. And if you weren't aware, the way our coaching program works is, without exception, all 60 or so coaches have come through our proven Amazon course. They've built a beautiful business. They have a teacher's heart. They lead with empathy, and they just can't help but be useful when people have questions. So we recruit them onto our team to share their success journey with other people who are interested. So if you want a mentor, somebody who can walk you through the process of doing what they've done, give us a call, get on our calendar, silentgym.com/bookacall is the link to have a conversation. Even if you're not sure if you want a coach or not, we'd still love to meet you, have a conversation about your business, see how it's going, see if there's any free resources or inexpensive resources we could send your way to help you on your journey. We'd love to connect with you. And like Grant and I talked about, we really would love to see you at the Proven Conference. As I was recording this, just before we hit record today, Grant, I was looking, we're at about 600 people registered right now for the conference. It's going to be a good one.
It's in a great family friendly place. You know, I think I told you before, we're getting in on, I think the conference doesn't start till Thursday.
Right.
And we're getting in on Sunday because we're going to hit Disney Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
That's awesome.
There's SeaWorld right next to it. And I think there's a water park we're going to do that we're going to walk to one day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The resort we're staying at, you can walk to SeaWorld, and there's, I can't remember what it's some big water park, man. It got great.
Yeah, I think Aquatica. I think that's the one we're going
like
to go to.
Yeah. When we were down there checking it out, I saw it. It looks pretty awesome. Yeah, and it's a very family-friendly resort. Lots to do inside the safety of the resort, several restaurants. And the hotel room rate is $129 a night. We negotiated down. That's like more than half off of what you could easily be charging for the rooms at this place. So yeah, bring your family. Come hang out with hundreds of business building warriors. It's going to be awesome. Be sure to say hi to Grant if you see him, and thank him for being on the show today. But on behalf of the whole team and everyone who puts this podcast together, God bless all the business building warriors. We'll have another great episode for you very soon. Talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to Silent Sales Machine Radio. Visit silentgym.com for a link to our free newsletter, our free Facebook group, and all of our resources mentioned on today's show.